ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम अज्ञानतमरंदस्य ज्ञानंजनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। I was born in the darkest ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisance unto him. Srila Prabhupada ki. We are looking at Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 67. Lord Balaram slays Dvidvid Gorilla. Hari Bol. Glad he does. So I'd like to charade this out with, if you like. And so if you can refrain from looking at the screen, that'd be great. Okay, so here we go. A little glimpse into what it's going to be like when we're with the kids tomorrow night. Kids, children, whatever. Okay, this chapter describes how Lord Baladev enjoyed the company of the young girls of Vraja on Raivataka mountain and killed the ape Dvidvid there. Narakasura, a demon whom Lord Krishna killed, had a friend named Dvidvid, an ape. Dvidvid wanted to avenge the death of his friend, so he set fire to the homes of the cowherds, devastated Lord Krishna's province of Anartha, and flooded the coastal lands by churning the oceans water with his mighty arms. The rascal then tore down the trees and the ashrams of great sages, and even passed what some of you are sitting on, stool, and the other one, number one, urine, on their sacrificial fires. He kidnapped men and women and imprisoned them in mountain caves, which he sealed off with boulders. After thus disrupting the entire land, including many young women of respectable families, Dvidvid came upon Raivataka mountain, where he found Lord Baladev enjoying in the company of a bevy of attractive women. Ignoring Lord Baladev, who was apparently intoxicated from drinking Varuni liquor, Dvidvid displayed his anus to the women right in front of the Lord and further insulted them by making crude gestures with his eyebrows and passing, I'm not going to demonstrate this, passing stool and urine. Okay. Dvidvid's outrageous behavior angered Lord Baladev, and he threw a stone at the ape. But Dvidvid managed to dodge it. He then ridiculed Lord Baladev and tugged at the women's dresses. Seeing this audacity, Lord Baladev decided to kill Dvidvid. Thus he took up his club and his plow weapon. Powerful Dvidvid then armed himself with pulling up a shala tree from the ground, and with this tree he struck the Lord on the head. Lord Baladev, however, remained unmoved and smashed the tree trunk to pieces. Dvidvid uprooted another tree and yet another and another until the forest was denuded. But although he struck Baladev on the head with one tree after another, the Lord
was unaffected.
Simply, The Lord simply broke all the trees to pieces. Then the foolish ape started throwing a barrage of stones. Lord Baladev crushed them all to... No. Powder, yes.
Yes.
Yes. After which Dridvid charged the Lord and hit him on the... with his fists, infuriating him, putting aside his club and plow weapons. Lord Balaram then struck Dridvid's throat and shoulder, at which point the ape vomited blood and fell down dead. We're such a pacifistic movement. Having killed Dridvid, Lord Baladev set off for Dwarka as demigods and sages showered from the sky and offered him praises, prayers, and obeisance. Haribol, Jai. Text 1. The glorious King Parikshit said, I wish to hear further about Lord Sri Balaram, the unlimited and immeasurable Supreme Lord, whose activities are all astounding. What else did he do? And here's the verse, right? Text 2. Is that okay? That was that. Sri Shuka Vacha. Narakasya. Sakha. Kaschid. Dridvido Nama Varanaha Sugriva Satchiva Sota Brata Maindasya Viryavan Shrishuka Uvacha Narakasya Sakha Kaschid Dridvido Nama Varanaha Sugriva Satchiva Susta Susta Brata Mindasya Viryaman Shri Shukovacha Narakasya Sakakatschid Vividu Namavaranaha Sugriva Satchiva Sota Brata Mindasya Viryaman. Sri Shuka Vacha. Arakasya Sakha Kaschid. Navarana. Sugriva Sachivastu. Brata Mindasya Viryavan Sukho Vacha Kasyasaka Kaschid Udo Nama Varana Sugriva Sachiva Sukha Brata Mindasya Vaishnavi Shri Shuka Vacha Arakasya Sakha Kaschid Dvivido Nama Bharana Sugriva Sachiva Sota Brata Mainda Shibi Ariyavan Shri Shuka Vacha Narakasya Sakha Kaschid Divido Nama Harana Sugriva Sachiva Sutta Brata Mindasya Bhiryavan Shri Shuka Uvacha Shri Shuka Dev Goswami said Narakasya of the demon Naraka Sakha, friend, kaschit, a certain, dvidvidha, dvidvidha, nama, by name, varanaha, an ape, sugriva, King Sugriva, sachivaha, whose advisor, saha, he, atta, also, brata, the brother, mindasya, of minda, viryavan, powerful. Translation. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, there was an ape named Dvidvid, who was a friend of Narakasura's. This powerful Dvidvid, the brother of minda, had been instructed by King Sugriva. Please repeat. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, there was an ape named Dvidvid, who was a friend of Narakasura. This powerful Dvidvid, the brother of minda, had been instructed by King Sugriva. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We can charade if you want. Srila Jiva Goswami points out some interesting facts about the ape Dvidvid. Although Dvidvid was an associate of Lord Ramachandra, he later became corrupted by bad association with the demon Naraka. As stated here, Naraka Saka. This bad association was the reaction for an offense Dvidvid had committed when, being proud of his strength, he disrespected Lord Ramachandra's brother, Lakshman, and others. Those who worship Lord Ramachandra sometimes chant hymns addressed to Minda and Dvidvid, who are attendant deities of the Lord. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the Minda and Dvidvid mentioned in this verse are empowered expansions of these deities, who are residents of Lord Ramachandra's Vaikuntha domain. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concurs with Srila Jiva Goswami's view that Dvidvid was ruined by bad association, which was a punishment for his having disrespected Sriman Lakshman. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti states, however, that the mind and Dvidvid mentioned here are actually the eternally liberated devotees addressed as attendant deities. During the worship of Lord Ramachandra, I thought you'd get that one. The Lord arranged their degradation, he says, to show the evil of the bad association that results from offending great personalities. Thus, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti compares the fall of Dvidvid and Minda to that of Jai and Vijay. The story about Dvidvid always gives chuckles to the devotees. And as we're dealing with an ape, when we talk about apes and monkeys, it's very close to humans. They look like us. They've got two arms and legs. They can be goofy, and we can be goofy. And when you go to a zoo, I think monkeys and apes are the most popular, let's say, of all the animals that you see. People swarm around them because they're like us in so many ways. Anyways, we have a case here where Dvidvid and others, because every day while Krishna was in Vrindavan and that area of Gokul, there was a new personality to worry about. There was a new antagonist, a new terrorist. And so this time it's Dvidvid. Now, whether it's Krishna or whether it's Balaram, it doesn't really matter. They share the same mission, and that is to yada yada hidharmashe lanir bhavativa abhyutanam adharmashe tadatmanam sarajamyaham paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam So they take care of giving shelter to the devotees, the sadhu people, and also to, let's put it in the positive way, liberating those who really don't deserve the liberation. So that's Krishna's purpose. That's his mission. And that is shared with Balaram. They come here. They also share other pastimes. Krishna has fun. Balaram has fun. And they do like to spend some time with the gopas and the gopis. Balaram is no exception to this pastime. He likes to get in there with the ladies. And he likes to dance with them. And he likes to take a little extra sugar, you know, in the form of liquid. Sugar is kind of has bad connotations. People call it white poison. But this is a kind of liquor that, remember in the early days of the Sunday feast, many of us were just getting off of things when we first joined. But then we had halava, and then we had very sweet nectar. I remember one particular person, he was given guidelines how many cups of sugar to put in the nectar. Okay, so you have four, you know, those containers that are four cups. He was told to put three cups in there. Three cups, but he put three times four into the nectar. And so some people got a little bit intoxicated, you know, I mean, in the most passable way possible. I can remember one devotee sprawled out across the washer and dryer. He had so much. So this is one of the alilas of the Lord, to take to organic intoxication. Okay? Sattvic / organic / you know, kosher / prashadamized liquor. And in the process, Dvidvid came, and what I always appreciate about demons and demons alike is that they have buddy systems. You know, they have associates, they have friends, amigos. This is always the case. Because human beings are social animals. We hang around with each other. And we interact for good or bad, but we need each other. Let's say if we all joined we started a gang. We're in downtown, say, Miami. Okay. Started Hispanic, black, white, gangster. We would be enthused by each other's association. We would share ideas. We would strategize our terrorism. We would be very good at it because many heads are better than one. Right? And we would end up doing a lot of damage. There would be a lot of power there. There's power in presence. There's power in numbers. That's a fact. And so, whether for bad or whether for good, this, the end result is the same. You need association. It's hard to do things on your own. It's hard to fly solo. It's hard to get on in this life alone. So, as we were just, you know, in India not so long ago, and we put together this drama called The Blue Mystic. And it's about Krishna, of course. And really, it's a story more about Kamsa and how he was. Kamsa actually was not such a bad guy. I mean, his heart melted when the first child was presented to him. The first son of Vasudeva and Devaki said, it's not the eighth child. It's supposed to be a threat to me. I mean, it's the eighth child, but not this one, not this first one. So here, you can have him back. And then, so his heart melted when he saw that baby, that first child. And then he also became humbled when Durga made her presence up in the sky. Actually, his heart melted once again. But always, he was flippant. He went back and forth because he was in the wrong association. They always turned nasty. His disposition was nasty. But he had a chance. Narada, when he came to visit him, he had, you know, he had people that could have made a difference for him. The Leela is that Narada Muni also gave him what appeared to be the wrong advice. Yeah, watch out for Vasudev, watch out for his kind. They're coming, they're taking birth. The demigods are, you know, they are surfacing. Watch out, Haribol, beware. Red signals all over the place. So it's all about association. And this word association that Prabhupada uses so much, it actually has sort of like, it sounds more like business-like in some ways. That's the terminology, association. I'm with such and such association, when you hear that. It's not like friends. Friends has a different connotation, right? So there's, but association usually implies something a little more serious. You know? So it is serious. Krishna coming together, and he's with his kind. And Krishna is also taking opposition against the other kind. Now, when we hear from the acharyas like Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, generally they're there to tell us that these terrorists are actually devotees. They're actually, it's all one in a sense. Everyone's a devotee. Just some are playing negative roles and some are playing positive roles. And then when you have that, then you have a drama. A good drama, all means there has to be conflict. There has to be conflict. And every day in our life, we have conflicts. We cannot expect, like say if one of our famous alligators from Florida was to come up here, right next to us here, and sometimes things just happen when you talk about them, you know. Then you would be, you know, excited. Wow, that's great. And every day in our life, we are met with some kind of conflict, some kind of antagonism within. Every day, there's some demons crawling around inside of us that we have to deal with. And then it's a drama. The drama happens when we're chanting Hare Krishna. The drama happens when we're doing devotional things. Because that's when you make a deliberate effort to be very clean, to be very sattvic. And yet while you are trying, there's this opposition coming in. And you're struggling very hard, and it's a tug of war. It's a wrestling game within, mental wrestle. And that's when it becomes an interesting drama. So we hope that may the best man win. And the best man always is the one who just follows along with what Krishna wants. Are really what it means to be a Vaishnava is to follow the will of God, to follow the will of Krishna, whatever he wants. So if you play a negative person, then follow the script, so to speak. Follow the script. Follow the blocking, the director's direction, and everything will be okay. The drama will be played out really the way it's supposed to be. Now sometimes, since the names were mentioned here categorically, Jai and Vijay and others, they were actually basically good devotees, but made some mistakes, and they got a little offensive, and then they took birth three times, each one of them as some unfavorable kind of personalities. But each time they came, it created an amazing epical drama, created conflict. And then that is what we devotees become absorbed in. Conflict. When it comes to the internal conflict that happens for each and every one of us, it's not anything you invite. It's not anything you arrange or sign contracts with. The little demons just come naturally. They come up like weeds. They just come up. You don't ask for them. But they can be trouble, just like weeds can be trouble. And they can choke. They can choke the plants that you're trying to cultivate, the plants that you're trying to hopefully will bear fruit or vegetables. So it's these weeds that we have to actually tackle. And weeds seem to like each other's company. I thought it was very interesting. Recently, I was in central Canada. I was up at the head of Lake Superior, which is right smack in the middle of the country. And I noticed, especially through my walks, there's this one place in Canada, all the roads filter through there. There are no roads up there. It's just bear and polar bear country. There, everything filters through this one place, right at the head of Lake Superior. And I noticed in my walks going through there, and just the other day when I was there by plane, that the birch trees, the white birch, was so beautiful. They're having a real tough time. they're struggling to stay alive. So sitting next to me in the plane was a gentleman who has worked with the pulp and paper industry. He's now a Floridian. He actually converted to coming down south. But he spent 30 years working in the pulp and paper industry up north. And I asked him, tell me, what's this thing about? Why are the birch trees having such a tough time? Why are they, you know, dying on us? He says, so when the loggers come in, they take all the trees around, you know. They take the jack pine and others like that. And then they leave the white birch. And so they're alone. I said, so they're alone. I jumped in. So they're alone. And they're interdependent, right? Yes. He said, exactly. They're interdependent. The trees, even though they're of different species, they depend on each other's existence. Whether it's like giving shelter, like from the wind, or maybe the gases that are coming, the oxygens that are coming from the trees, they help each other breathe, you know. So they're there for each other. They're interdependent, I would say. So a birch tree never stands on its own. Similarly, we cannot stand on our own. As devotees, we cannot stand on our own in our devotional service. It was in the 70s when Prabhupada was with us, and there was one devotee who was actually trying to do his bhajan alone. And he's chanting all day long, alone, not with others. So it was brought to the attention of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada made a prophetic statement about he may not be able to carry on. So that's exactly what happens, you know, when you try to tackle Krishna consciousness by yourself. And not seeking the association of your devotional amigos, you start to just dry up, wither up, and you will end up not doing any more Hari Bols after maybe even a short time. The tendency with the mind is to start to find fault. Tendency is to, I know for myself that if I haven't seen somebody for a while, maybe I'll even think a little bit offensively about them. But once, as soon as I see them, oh, whatever negative thoughts were there, they're just dissolved right on the spot. Here's a warm person coming to me, and he's a Vaishnav, and he means good, means well. And what was I thinking before? You know? So that is just the nature of the mind, which is almost to be, you know, sort of like a vehicle that invites, it's like it's a house that welcomes the demons. The mind is like a house, a building in which, come on in. I got my nice sofa. Lie down. Have a few drinks. Spend a little time together. It's pretty much like that. And so it's almost like the mind is almost like a separate entity. Although it will carry for us, it has reminiscences of the past, the things that we used to do, good and bad. The mind tends to want to dwell on the negative things, the things that will separate us from the Lord, from Krishna, and from Balaram. And therefore, it's a good idea to not take the mind too seriously and just neglect it or ignore it. But if we see it as separate from our existence, then maybe that helps us a little bit sometimes. You know? It says, I have nothing to do with you. Thank you very much. I really feel honored that you came to acknowledge my presence, but no way, Jose, it's time to go. Thank you very much. The ultimate contraception. Yeah, no, thank you. Goodbye. Salam. And that's the way we must deal with our mind on our daily battle, you know, with the little demons that come in to try to produce a drama. A drama that we don't need. Generally, when there is conflict that we see around us, we all relate to it. And we're an immediate spectator because we have been there. We have done that. It says, I've been down that path. And we always wonder, well, who will come out victorious in the struggle? Will it be a happy ending? Everybody wants happy endings, isn't it? And let's say if there's a station break, okay, between the conflict, then we're just waiting. Oh, great, I just got to get back to it. I got to get back to the drama. Because sometimes when there's conflict, there's a little bit of an arrest period. There's some quiet moments. And then back at the battle again, back at loggerheads, we'll come out victorious. So we have to see ourselves as, yeah, some kind of warrior, some kind of person on the battlefield. As mentioned earlier on, we are a pacifistic movement. We're nonviolent. I think we project that kind of air about us, that we're peaceful, peace-loving people who like to sing and dance and party in a nice, clean way. But when people read our books, they sometimes get another, they see another side of what is our culture. And it's about wars. Our prime book, Bhagavad Gita, is all about a war. What's this? And I can remember the first time I went to Nirvindavan, it was just a new bhakta, and I went to see the drama the devotees put on at Janmashtami time. And I was part of the hippie, moderate hippie, love, everything's groovy, peace, love scene. And then I saw, and I knew the Leela, the pastime, when I saw the devotee who played Krishna straddling on Kamsa's chest over and over again, and devotees going up, uproariously, and for a moment I thought, what did I get myself involved in? These are a bunch of, you know, let's say aggressive mongers, you know. Now, I joined this movement of aggressive, violent people. So think about it. So in our life, we always have, there's always conflict. It makes it kind of fun. How many of you like to be in the midst of a big storm when it comes up? I mean, maybe not a Floridian type, you know, everything's wiped out. Tamahar, you like a storm? Why? It's exciting. Yeah, it is. Any other reasons why people might like storms? You like watching it from your... Okay. That's a good point. It's just, it's an entertaining. Well, what would be another reason why people would like storms? It brings rain. What if it's a storm that doesn't bring rain? Yeah. I'm just checking out. Blow with it, Matt. Okay, yes, go ball. What's your answer? Nothing. Okay, that's fine. I would kind of expect it. He said nothing. Okay. Oh, yeah. You see a lot of power manifest before you, you know. It's a little bit like Krishna's opulence is not coming at you, or let's say whizzing by you. What else? What would be another way to describe, you know, what it means to be in a storm? Yes. Everything is stagnant, and now suddenly everything's aroused. Like cooking a big sabji, you stir everything up. You know, delicious sabji. Yeah. A nice khichdi. Yes. Action. There's action. Yeah, life can be very dull and monotonous. So, you know, especially if, you know, you're pacifist, you're peaceful person. You know, it's just nice to have some action once in a while. Yeah, what else? Yes. Scary. And that's one of the rasas. Everyone wants to be scared. People pay lots of money to be scared. Halloween or horror films or something like that, or when you're a kid, you like to spook people. And, you know, it's like a rush, an adrenaline. Hair stand on it. What else? Why are other reasons for this? Okay, so when it passes, you like it because when it's over, you can appreciate peace more. What else? What else conjures up? What else does a storm conjure up? Somebody's getting some reaction. The people who deserve it. Like the other day, I was in Toronto and we had a pretty hard rain, and a tree came, a maple tree came down, smashed three cars that were parked there. And you know, everyone's looking. Some people are thinking, well, they probably deserved it. What else? What would be another reason why you would like a storm? Yeah. Then you were calling for help. Yes, yes, yes. I can remember as a kid, I'm from Southern Ontario, and they have a lot of electric storms there. And whenever there was one, my mother would take holy water and sprinkle it around. Immediately, we'd be thinking of God. Right? Actually, it's kind of a humbling experience. A humbling, humbling experience. Any other reasons for liking to be in a storm? This is amazing. I never thought storms could be so popular. Yeah. Because it's dangerous, so you like danger. Like most people like to live dangerously, slightly dangerously, especially if you're about 16, 17, live slightly dangerously, you know, isn't it?
All right.
It excites. Okay, people at home, okay, dangerous was the last word, okay. Any other reasons? We're getting into close to 108 here. Yes, Mukherjee.
How bad it's going to be. It's going to affect you. Like, we've had a 100-and-some-year-old tree in our yard. Just
came down. Right? So you don't know when it's going to come down. So in other words, there's suspense. You're held at the edge of your seat during a storm. It's kind of like entertainment. Anything else? Oops, we exhausted ourselves. No. It's nice when you're trying to sleep. Do you mean that sarcastically? Or? Oh, okay. Okay. So it's not, when there's a storm and you have a peaceful sleep, you can, or you feel safe. No, when you're like not in this, it's soothing. Okay. Yes.
And the opportunity to think about Lord because he might die.
So when there is a storm, it forces us to think of the Lord. We get prayerful. It is humbling. And your ego is challenged. You know, you're not so powerful after all. You become meek for a moment. A purifier as I am the wind. Okay. Good. Great. So that was good. I never thought we'd stretch it out like to that limit. Talking out about storms. So everybody has storminess. Every day there's a storm going on inside, even in a nice calm day outside. You know? You could be on a placid lake. It's like in a mirror, you know, swans going by. And inside you might be struggling. There might be a storm going on. So look at those storms and know how to deal with storms. And people are in Florida are known for, you know, expecting some, having some expectations, especially is it September, October in that area? Did I get it right? Yeah. June? These days it could be any time. Oh, is that right? Okay. And then, so you know how to protect yourself because anything could happen. So in Krishna consciousness, the best protection is Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Kha. You get that company. You get the right people around you. They're always there to encourage you. You want to start a business, usually a successful business comes from people who have the same mindset. They're around you. They're encouraging you. Maybe you've got business partners. And that gives you a special fortification and strength. So it's just the same old, good old principle of having good company. That's all it is. And as much as devices and the modern mechanistic world tends to keep us apart, you know, because after all, I don't need any people. I've got my device to keep me excited. But at the end of the day, there's nothing like having communication with people and seeing them in their face and studying their gestures and their emotions and the subtle nuances that come. There's nothing as entertaining as that. So we should never forget that. If we are in a situation where we are with those little devices and it means our livelihood, then at least we need to get enough of a balance in our life that we're not with them. You know, we spend a little time with them and go out and spend some time and meet the trees, okay? And even when you're going down the trail, you have to watch the ticks, because after all, in this world, there's always something to be mindful of, always. It's a spooky place. It's a spooky place, and we always need to seek, look for safety. So there are different kinds of associations. There are different kinds of people. Sometimes when you need to get excited, you have that extrovert that comes around and gets everybody excited laughing. And then sometimes if you're kind of wired up, then someone comes around as like Mr. Ice Cubes, you know, and comes along and he tones you down. You know, Krishna provides all kinds of people to help us in our endeavors in this world to be able to cope and to seek for some kind of hope that we will make it in Krishna consciousness. We will win. It's not an easy thing to fight in this world. The antagonists are in big numbers. We are basically outnumbered, it seems so. And that's one of the reasons why we are trying to create a society of volume. The more people that we have around us, the more strength we have as well. So we wish to outnumber the very big numbers that are there. So we'd like to thank you very much, Prabhus, and you're all Prabhus. Matajis and Pitajis, you're all Prabhus. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments quickly? Yes.
It's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita that the certain places of loss in Vyai Mano Buddhi are the mind senses and intelligence. How can the mind, or how is the best way the mind can keep them out?
So the enemies, the ultimate enemy of lust, for instance, it rests in different places. The mind, the senses, and the intelligence, he said, right? So the question was about the mind.
How can the mind keep the lust control or out?
I'm going to give you the simplest answer. Be in the company of people who are not so lusty. Just be in good, be in that good company again, and be involved in positive things, things that do not stir up those the lower nature. And it boils down to that simple matter. Be mindful of the company you keep. So surely you'll get lusty if you're associating with those who are always thinking about that. And the reverse will happen if you're with people who are content with themselves. So look for the right people. Anything else? Yes, one more.
Sometimes we would associate with devotees, and that would not necessarily perform like devotional practice, or maybe we can say with sports. And sometimes you have, okay, all devotees, we're going to play a game of football or something, or you know, sometimes we think, well, we're taking this association, but this is what we're doing. So,
there's nothing wrong
with that. Is that something Krishna conscious, or is it something that can pull you away? Or
there's nothing wrong with devotees having sports together. After all, we need to camaraderie. When you learn how to play like a team, then you apply that in Krishna consciousness. There's nothing wrong with sports. Of course, some of them are a little more, let's say, tamasic and rajasic. Some sports are a little more sattvic. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't see any problem with it at all. Prabhupada had to encourage devotees to swim. That's a Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates were swimming and playing and having fun. It may appear to be frivolous, but they were having a lot of fun. Remember, one year, us GDC members were we went to the Ganga. We decided instead of meetings, let's have a day off. So we went to the Ganga in a boat, and then we played with the ball, and kept it up in the air. And I remember Jayapataka Swami, laying down a whole bunch of rules that took a little bit of the fun out of it. But we could understand that's his nature, that you're seeing everybody's nature coming out. And it was kind of wonderful to see that in him. Oh, he was a fierce fighter. And, it brought out another side of us, which we need to get a nice balance in our life. Sports are also there for your health, helps towards teamwork. So I encourage it. I don't think that every half thing has to be just in a temple where you sit quiet. I don't think that's what our bodies are designed for. It has to be a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Did you want to say something tomorrow? Oh, I thought you were here. Okay, so thank you very much. And for those who are interested, we're doing a unique workshop. It's called Nine Devotions, and it's very interactive, and it's going to be held here tonight. And you can see that we'll provide the tools whereby you can very easily walk people through this Nine Devotions workshop with a group of people who know virtually little about Krishna consciousness. It's a fun experience. So if you're able to come, please bring some, there's something called pens and paper, okay? Or you can bring your devices for texting. So we're going to go through that, and we'd like to see you there. Okay? So thank you very much. We love you all. Hare Krishna. How many, anybody like this? Okay. Well,